Support for the Marketplace Morning Report comes from the Friends of WILL and from Busey. Busey supports small businesses and entrepreneurs to bring vibrancy to the local economy. Busey, your dream, our promise.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of January 2015. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson from right here in Champaign County. We'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Talk about the cash grain market with the folks at the Anderson's Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana. And discuss three issues Daryl Good has found in the last USDA set of reports. And that all happens as we make our way through this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. March corn futures at $3.88 for the day. We're down 2.25 on the afternoon. The May futures down 2 at 3.95 3/4. In July at 4.02 1/2, a penny and a half lower. September corn 4.08 the quarter down 1.5, and December down a penny and a half at 4.15 1/2. That in the corn pit. From the soy complex, bean futures $9.83 1/2, up 1.5 for the day. May at a penny and 3/4 higher, $9.89 1/2. The final trade in July, beans at $9.94 1/2, up 1.5 higher for the day. August at $9.94, up 1.5, and next year's November's were down a penny for the day at $9.65 3/4. Bean meal finished $330.50, up $4 in the lead, and $32.41 was the final trade in the March bean oil at 43 cents lower. Chicago soft red winter wheat March contract 0.25 cent lower at $5.36 3/4. July at $5.43 1/2. Up 0.75 cents, and the Kansas City hard red finished the lead option down 5.5 cents. July at 5.79 1/2, that finished down 4 for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago like this at 153.75, up 70 cents in the February. April at 151.90, 82 1/2 higher. The feeder cattle on the afternoon finished the Jans at 215.90, $1.42 1/2 higher. March at $205.42 1/2 in the feeders, up $2.95. And the lean hogs today. The settlement price for the February contract at $72.25, 47.5 cents higher. And you're listening to Illinois Public Media.
Support comes from Country Financial, hosting information sessions for farmers throughout the state of Illinois from December to March. Topics include updates on both the federal crop insurance program and the farm bill, as well as how to use grain marketing and crop insurance together to manage risk. More information is at countrycrop.com.
Let's take a look at the outside markets at this hour. We'll start with the energies and crude oil. It's currently trading the March contract at $47.70. That's up $1.23 on the afternoon. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.64 1/10. That's a penny and 4 cents higher for the day. And the gasoline and the RBOB wholesale price, $1.32 3/10 cents. That's a penny higher for the day. Natural gas at $2.98 3/10, up 15 2/10, and ethanol futures at $1.38 9/10, just about 0.1 cent lower on the afternoon, or rather 0.1 cent higher on the afternoon. Here's what the outside markets show us for the Dow Jones Industrial Average, a trade at 17,472, roughly 11 points higher. Gold futures up about 25 cents at $1,294, and the gold index at dollar index, that is, at 93.14 1/2. That's up, rather down, 0.204. Here's what the weather forecast looks like as it comes from the National Weather Service. For the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon, a slight chance of rain, some snow. It'll be cloudy, high of 37 degrees. Tonight, a 20% chance of snow. That before 8 in the evening, cloudy, a low of 27. And tomorrow, mostly cloudy, a high of 36 degrees. Tomorrow evening, partly cloudy and a low of 25. Friday, sunny skies and 40. Friday night, partly cloudy and 29. Saturday, partly sunny and 43. And Sunday, chance of rain, maybe some snow. Mostly cloudy, a high of 42 degrees. More on the weather forecast with Drew Lerner when we get to the bottom of this half hour.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
Well, it is a Wednesday afternoon. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. Jackie Vakes is on the phone line to take up what happened at the commodity markets, the futures trade in Chicago for the day. Hi, Jackie. How are you today?
I'm pretty darn good. It's nice to talk with you again.
Well, it is good to talk with you, too. We haven't talked on the air, at least, I think, since mid-December. A lot has happened in the marketplace, including the January USDA reports. And I kind of like to get an idea as we start our discussion what you thought about those reports and what the numbers look like, how it sets the tone maybe for the first quarter of the calendar year.
Well, I think in general, when you looked at the report, the expectations weren't too far off. I think the bigger implication is that the funds were disappointed. They really were looking for a much more bullish corn report than what we actually saw, and therefore I think they're struggling to try and figure out what direction they want to go. And, you know, so I think that as we look at what has happened since the report, we have broke down some, and I believe that, you know, we will test some more of the support areas and just try and head into the February time frame. You know, the February time frame, Todd, is the crop insurance time frame. And so the big question will be, I guess in my mind, is, you know, will this change in the this yield adjustment that they're going to allow them to make on crop insurance? I believe we'll probably buy some corn acres, but will there be enough there, you know, to actually encourage farmers to want to, you know, to want to grow corn for this next year? And so the whole report itself was kind of a typical situation. You know, we traded the report that morning, and the real market showed up the next day, and we've kind of had the real market ever since then. And the real market has been one of some confusion other than on the bean side, where, you know, the bias is for a lower bean crop or a larger bean crop and a lower bean price, basically, especially with what's going on in South America at this point in time.
Yeah, well, tell me about that, because not only do we deal, and you know this, and most of our listeners know this, that not only do we deal with a crop in the United States, but we deal with a crop of equal or larger size out of South America. A new crop of soybeans is coming onto the world stage every 6 months, and it looks like the one out of South America in general will be a record breaker this time around.
Oh, there's no question about that. In fact, Ceres came out and they raised theirs from, I think it was 91.6 up to 94.2 million metric tons. The general consensus is probably that it's going to be somewhere between 93 and 95 million metric tons, putting it, you know, 8 to 9 million metric tons higher than last year. You know, a lot of people are banking on the idea that, oh, they're not going to get as many beans as what they thought they were going to get. Well, yeah, they may not, but it's still going to be a record crop. Now, we do know that they're harvesting beans already. Early beans have been very variable, about 26 bushel to the acre up to 52 bushel to the acre. They got hurt by that dry weather. But the medium to late maturity beans look like they're going to do really well, and they've started to plant the safrinha corn in Brazil. And, you know, their prices have been going down steadily, so we definitely believe there will be less acres planted. But, you know, it's still a situation where we have to remember they are paid based on the U.S. dollar. And as long as the U.S. dollar remains strong or goes higher, that still encourages them to expand acres.
And like in the United States, where we do have governmental interference from time to time, and that happens it happens far more subtly in the United States, for instance, as you mentioned up front, in the new programs, the exclusion, which may bring more corn acres into production. Sometimes it's more direct, and Argentina has a real problem once in a while, and their government's always kind of deciding what to do with currencies, and farmers make lots of decisions that are there that are directly related to the impact on their back wallets or on their economies based on what's happening in the capital city.
Well, that's absolutely the truth. And, you know, if we were in a governmental situation here where our agricultural products were the largest generator of taxes for our country, I guess we'd see a lot more and a lot less subtle interference in our pricing. You know, Argentina, before the first of the year, they were threatening that they were going to begin to cut credit off from the National Bank for farmers who didn't sell their beans. Well, on January 1st, they made good with that particular threat, and even to the point where they just plain closed some farmers' bank accounts. Can you imagine that? Come in, close your bank account. There have been a lot of problems with it, though, because they have a hard time identifying who actually owns the beans and how much they're still holding. In other words, there were people who, a lot of the beans in South America, like here in the U.S., are grown on rented land, okay? And there's an awful lot of confusion as to who actually grows the beans. So some farmers reported that their credit's been totally cut off, even though they're not the growers of the beans. It turns out that the renters grew the beans and not the landowner, but the landowner's account got shut down. And so this is an issue that they're going to deal with for a while here. And it looks as if the latest reports look as if they're still sitting on about 350 million bushels of beans, of old crop beans, as we head toward, their harvesting time. And so that's going to be a problem for us. There's no question about it, because they are going to come to market, whether we like it or not. Actually, I could see them, taking new crop beans to market, perhaps, and letting old crop beans sit in what they call their horizontal silos. You know, they use bags down there now, just like we do some places here. So, but it's a thorn in our side. And I can, if you look at that government will not stop until they get their money. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, for comparison's sake, for those who are keeping track, 350 million bushels of soybeans left in the bin from the last crop in South America compares to what the USDA is saying will be left in the bin by the time we get to the harvest season for our next crop of 410 million. But both those numbers are big, and by comparison to what we've had left over in previous years, combined, they would be enormous, that's going to, I suppose, put pressure on the marketplace. And is it one of the reasons that China has decided it's canceling some of its lots and purchases out of the United States, do you suppose?
Oh, I think so. I think, China's well known for canceling high price product and then coming back in and buying back at lower prices. The disturbing part is that we're seeing them come back in and buying smaller quantities at the lower prices, than what they were doing. We did get a little bit of good news out of China. Their economic data actually looked a bit better. And, the whole situation between Europe and Russia, the Eurozone, it's almost like a time bomb ticking over there. We're all sitting on edge because we're waiting for the European Central Bank to announce what we believe will be another round of quantitative easing, because those economies are not in good shape. And, the Eurozone itself I think there's pretty rough times ahead. We have the Greek vote on Sunday, and if the anti-austerity people get in like they're expected to, they fully expect them to refuse to pay back the money that was used to bail them out. And now this morning, the Eurozone, basically they're saying, well, I guess we may have to look at a new bailout for Greece. They're so much nicer over there than I would be. I think I tell Greece, you're on an island, float away. It's okay. but that's what they're talking about now, that maybe they'll come up with another bailout for Greece. So, I think we have to keep in mind that this could really be a rough road for us too, because we know that has an impact and an implication for us. In Russia, the fighting in Ukraine on the eastern coast has started up again. They are reacting to the lower oil prices because Russia is cutting their budget for 15, and they're talking about major inflation over there potential. And so when you look at places like Argentina as an example, and you have inflation, well, the government says it's 12%, the privates say it's 26 to 30%.
Right.
I can't see how the people can handle it very well. And, the whole crude oil situation is one that's, it just has giant implications for the world from the standpoint, crude going down right now is probably one of the things that is saving the European Union, as well as many of the other countries, because it's priced in U.S. dollars. With the dollar higher, if we were sitting at $100 a barrel, this would be a really tough situation. But, so many people are talking that crude's going to bounce. But, we know that there are at least three, if not four, new wells coming on in the Gulf this year. And, if you're an investor in that, you've probably borrowed some money. So I would venture to think that oil is going to pump, whether people want it to or not. And, if we bounce back up, I think the frackers will come back in and amp up again. So if you look at the crude-to-corn ratio, which I always follow, it's at 12.2 to 1 right now. And as the little bit of time as September was ago, it was 27-1. So you know that's just a ratio I like to use basically to kind of get a good feel for where we stand. You know, the dollar is the scary part as far as I'm concerned. We've been very fortunate that the funds have wanted to be buyers of this marketplace and have defended their positions. But when you look at the dollar, our next objective is 94.32, and that was from November of 2003. And if we make that, and I believe we probably will, then we're looking at the 50% retracement, which would be at 96.04. That was the move from 121.29 in July of 2001 down to that 70.80 in March of 2008. This is big. You know, that, and so that'll come into play. And, boy, I don't know. You know, I don't know if we can withstand. We really need the countries like South Korea, Taiwan, those places. We need those economies to really improve to figure that they're going to continue to buy our products. And so this is, everybody has to have their ducks in a row. Let's put it that way. You need risk management now more than ever.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time. I look forward to our discussion again next week.
You bet. Thanks, Todd. Have a good day.
Mm-hmm. That, of course, is Jackie Vink. She's with Stuart Peterson and hails from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Speaking of Champaign County, we're here in Champaign County, but we're going to head over to DeWitt County and Clinton, Illinois tonight. That's not very far away. We'll be there about 6:30 along with Gary Schnitke. He's an extension ag economist from the University of Illinois, just upstairs. Couple of floors from me here at Mumford Hall, where our studio is today. We'll be at Clinton, Illinois, with a Farm Bill Outlook for those who are wanting to sign up for the Farm Bill, or at least find out how they're going to sign up for the Farm Bill and get an idea of what base acre allocation should be like, what yield updates might look like, and which programs to sign up for. ARC County, and PLC. You can do that tonight, and we'll be at the Richland College building. That's at 140 Sunset Court just to the west side of Clinton, Illinois tonight. It's right along Route 51 at 6:30 p.m. It's free, open to everybody. Thanks to the folks at WHOW, by the way, for sponsoring that event. They're the big 1520 a.m. We air on that radio station at this time as a simulcast. We appreciate all they do for us. Randy Miller and company will be there tonight, too. And their sponsor, Peterson Insurance, will be along. That's tonight at the Richland College building there in Clinton, Illinois. I'll be there along with Gary Schnitke. We'll take up the Farm Bill and the decisions that producers will be making over the next several weeks, including base acre allocation, yield updates, and which programs to take, ARC or PLC. Now, up next, you know, the final 2014 crop production numbers delivered by USDA in earlier January. Now, those reports left three issues unresolved. I talked with ag economist Daryl Good about the numbers and how he sees them.
The three problems, as identified by University of Illinois ag economist Daryl Good, center on the number of corn and soybean acres planted, the surprisingly small amount of corn used in the first 3 months of the marketing year, and the surprisingly large number of soybeans consumed in that same time frame. The difference between the total number of planted acres USDA NASS has reported over time and those officially reported by farmers to FSA, and that's USDA's Farm Service Agency, well, that's grown. The number of acres planted to wheat, corn, and soybeans, as tallied by USDA NASS, has steadily grown larger than the number of acres farmers are telling FSA they've sown. USDA has not offered an explanation. The difference in 2014 is nearly 9.3 million acres over the three crops, says Daryl Good.
The implication is that early FSA reports of planted acres probably will not be as useful in the future in predicting the final NASS estimate of planted acres. That has been a very useful forecast in the past. But this larger and varying difference between the two data sources mean that we probably will not be able to use the FSA data as efficiently as we have in the past.
The second issue is related to how much corn was used in the months of September, October, and November. Those are the first 3 months of the marketing year. USDA totals 4.25 billion bushels of disappearance, of which feed and residual use accounted for 2.198 billion. This number is 114 million bushels lower than the usage in the same period last year after it was revised down in this last report. The problem, says the U of I number cruncher, is that over time the range of usage represented in the first quarter figure as compared to total usage for the year, that's gotten wider.
The issue here is that first quarter use has not become a reliable forecaster of total marketing year consumption, so we will see a lot of uncertainty, I think, persist about how much corn is being fed for the next several months.
The numbers do get better as time passes during the marketing year. The expectation is the March 31 grain stocks report will be more accurate. But the third issue with the January USDA figures is also in the consumption numbers. The implied residual disappearance of soybeans in the first quarter set a record. This might mean the size of the 2014 soybean crop was overestimated.
We know that the soybean crop estimate gets revised with the September stocks report following harvest in most years. The problem is that first quarter disappearance is really not a good forecaster of either the direction or magnitude of that change. So while it is an issue, it will not be resolved for several months, with some insight perhaps coming from the March stocks report.
Time will eventually fix all three issues, but it is important to recognize them and the potential changes these may bring to the commodity markets. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason. Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Don't forget two things, that tomorrow during our Commodity Week program, we record that at 3 o'clock, we'll talk with Dan Bossi. He's of Ag Resource Company out of Chicago, Illinois. We'll post it to our website by about 5 tomorrow evening, if all goes well. Tonight, I'll be in Clinton, Illinois at the Richland Community Building, Community College Building, that is. Along with Gary Schnitke to take up the Farm Bill. That's at 6:30. It's free, open to the public. Come out if you'd like to talk to Gary and hear what he has to say about the Farm Bill and how to sign up for it. And right now, we're going to talk with Pete Peterson. He's at the Anderson's Climbers facility. That's located in near Logansport, Indiana, the ethanol plant there. Hi, Pete. Thanks for being with us. How's the ethanol plant operating today, and how are you doing economically, more importantly?
Well, it's we're starting to see the driveway pick up a little bit over the last few days. We went from below 50 loads a day in some cooler weather to the day before yesterday we had 100, and today we're well over 200 loads, back to normal. The economics of ethanol is red, as we would say, bleeding pretty good. Ethanol prices have been hit pretty hard the last few weeks.
And what are your bids there today that bumped you up to 200 trucks?
Let's see here. $3.80 cash on corn, and at our Delphi facility on beans, we're at $9.75. A lot of the deliveries now are on previously contracted contracts. I wish I could say it was our cash prices.
Oh, so not your cash prices. When you get back, when you chew through all those contracted prices, do you think you'll be jumping back down to 100 or 50 trucks?
Very well could. It's all indicative of grain movement, cash flow, and things of that nature. But right now, basis levels are starting to narrow in a little bit just to entice movement of grain. But you're right. They'll chew through the previously booked contracts very fast, and at that point in time, it's going to be gut check time.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. That's Pete Peterson. He's with the Anderson's Climbers facility in Logansport, Indiana. Back in 2 minutes.
It's National Granola Bar Day, and it's also International Hot and Spicy Food Day. It was John Harvey Kellogg who coined the word granola for a whole grain and nut mixture, but he never marketed the product. It was a rival, Charles Post, who once was a patient at Kellogg's Battle Creek Sanitarium, that would eventually market his own granola mix. He called it grape nuts. On this day in agricultural history in 1743, John Fitch was born. An American pioneer of steamboat transportation, he produced some of the nation's first serviceable steamboats. His first was an odd-looking machine. It was driven by a rack of American Indian canoe paddles, and the ship traveled at 6 to 8 miles an hour. In 1930, H.L. Collender died, an English physicist. He spent his life studying the thermodynamic properties of steam, but it was his son Guy who discovered the linkage between climate change and increases in carbon dioxide resulting from the burning of carbon fuels, part of the greenhouse effect. And in 1912, Conrad Bloch was born. He discovered that high levels of cholesterol in the bloodstream cause fatty deposits on the inner walls of arteries, which may lead to constricted blood flow and increase the chances of blood clotting and heart attack. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. And True Lerner is here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City to tell us about the weather forecast. Drew, we've had some nice days here in the Midwest. It's been a little warm, relatively speaking, for the winter months. What kind of conditions will we see over the next week or so?
Well, we're going to see a continuation of tranquil weather across the heart of the Midwest for a little while. We've got a very interesting storm system, though, that's brewing right now out in the southwestern corner of the U.S. hard red winter wheat country, and that's the area that I think the most people will be interested in here for a little while. We've got a significant snow event that will occur from portions of Colorado into the Texas Panhandle and western Oklahoma. These areas actually have been given a worse drought rating here recently relative to a year ago. In other words, the soil there is actually in worse shape than it was last year at this time. This snow event is going to be followed by a second storm that occurs on the January 30th and 31st. If both these events occur as advertised, there will be a substantial improvement in these southwestern wheat areas. As far as the Midwest is concerned, though, we aren't going to see much in the way of active weather for a while. We have a little disturbance that will come across the region from northwest to southeast this weekend, and will probably lay down a little bit of snow from the eastern Dakotas into Michigan and parts of Ohio, with a little bit of a mix of rain and snow likely just to the south of that. We may see 1 to 3 inches of snowfall with that event in those northern areas, but that's going to be about the extent of significant precipitation until we get to out towards the second weekend of the two-week outlook, and we'll see a more active weather pattern evolving.
Then if you turn your attention to the growing regions and the other parts of the world, where would you like to start today? What's of most interest?
Well, I think we're still watching South America rather closely. We're building a ridge of high pressure across parts of Argentina, and that high pressure ridge is likely to translate into a drying trend. Now, Argentina's had a lot of rain here in recent weeks, and the ground is saturated, and they've even had some flooding here periodically in the central and northeastern portions of the country. So the ridge is actually going to help that crop and make it look all the better. In the meantime, parts of Paraguay and some immediate neighboring areas in the southwest corner of Brazil are actually turning a little too dry as well, and they're going to be somewhat in a dry weather mode for a while here. So that's the only place in South America that looks like there's going to be a lot of stress developing here over the next maybe a week or a week and a half. The rest of Brazil is going to see timely rains and continue to see a very good evolution in their crop development potential. I don't think there's a big issue there. Certainly, it's gotten a little dry, and we are enduring some stress in some of these areas. The southeastern corner of Mato Grosso and Goiás, as well as Minas Gerais, are probably the areas that have been driest for the longest period of time. But up until this week, subsoil moisture has been carrying on normal crop development relatively well, with a little plant stress. This week we're getting a little bit too dry, but we're also at the end of this long stretch of drier bias conditions, and we will see showers and thunderstorms increasing this weekend and especially next week. So I think we may lose a little bit of bushels, but we're not going to lose a lot, and it's still going to be a tremendous crop.
Drew Lerner with World Weather Incorporated. I'm Todd
Gleason. Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.